Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankelberg and Adam Barrett's online. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Fred. How's it going?
Good. Well, instead of coffee, which is my routine, I've just topped off my tea. I've kind of tapped out my coffee and I'm doing the taper. You know, it's like marathon training. You do the intense stuff and then you taper into the, for me, it's tapering into the rest of the day with a lighter dose of caffeine.
You're getting off the bean?
Just you know, I've got my dosage for the morning and okay. Now I'm tapering into the rest of the day. And this afternoon and this midday would be water and things like that. But it's, you know, it's kind of finding the right balance, finding the right edge to take on the rest of the day.
You know, so well, balance, that's a good lead into what I'm hoping we're going to discuss.
Yeah, I thought you'd catch that. You know, one of the things, and you and I have been looking at these ideas and working on some concepts for a course and books and stuff like that. I know you're really interested in how organizations approach decisions and approach setting priorities and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had to quickly hit record because you'd sparked a memory of mine. I was doing an assessment some years ago, and it was a consumer product. And the program manager and I were chatting about their reliability program, and they knew they wanted to make some improvements in it. And so that's why I was there. And I asked her, how do you rank order time to market, cost, feature set, and quality, reliability aspects of your product? How do you rank order those? And she goes, oh, that's easy. It's time to market, and what were those other things?
Right.
You know, and right. She's the one organizing and prioritizing everything for the program.
Yep. But you know what's interesting? I think that actually exposes something that I always see as a fundamental fault is that obviously that's not the only thing. You know, mm-hmm. There's no point delivering something that's total junk or doesn't have the right features or it's at the wrong cost point on time. So, but what's interesting, I think, about that is that, you know, at the highest business level, there are all those different other factors. They are prioritized and weighted differently with different goals. But it seems like a lot of programs, the way that they resolve that balance is by giving individual people ownership of those individual goals and let the people fight it out. Or you know, in a healthy way, but create the balance that way. So in other words, as a project manager, she was forced, you know, she was told time to market's everything. There's no point releasing this late. But there, you know, there's other people who obviously were told it has to have X features or be, you know, has to have a cost point of this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having her say that kind of reinforces the fact that, you know, that the individuals end up becoming representative of just one of the, what I call, you know, product assets and program assets. And instead of it being everybody aware of all of them.
Well, you see that in some organizations where they have a design for manufacturing engineer, a design for the environment manager, a regulatory representative, and all these people sit around the table and make their case for why or how this should be important. It's the clever organizations that find a way to set priorities among those different fractions, and find the right balance. If it's always a competition for scarce resources, it fosters that domain building or empire building, and the strongest, loudest, most frequent voice gets the resources, independent of whether that's the right thing to do or not.
Right. But I think also what's interesting is the idea of prioritizing. That's oversimplifying something that's complex by saying, you know, time to market is more important than whatever, you know, cost point. It's not that simple, the weighting. It's a very complex relationship between all of them. And a good analogy when I talk about this I use is pretend that instead of, you know, budgeting for developing a product, you're budgeting for your household. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to, you know, you have your categories. Instead of, you know, time to market, you have your food budget, you have your vacation budget, your entertainment budget, your clothing budget. Well, the relationship between all those, you know, somewhere in your mind, you have a computational, you know, algorithm for it that's complex, because you know that, you know, with the food, you're like, well, okay, an easy place to save some money is to cut down on the food budget. You know, we'll cut out snacks and this and that. But you also, so that ends up becoming of lower weight than, let's say, cutting back on whatever, clothing. You know, you already feel like, but you obviously can't take the food budget down to zero, or it defeats the purpose. Everybody starves to death. Whereas something like the vacation budget is a dramatically different algorithm, because the vacation budget, probably the best, the way you'd approach that is you're like, okay, we can try to do a simpler vacation. But after you chop out about 20% of that budget, you might as well just go to zero, because doing vacation with half the money or something is really not worth it. That money's better spent transferring that last 50% to the entertainment budget, you know? And that's a very different kind of, you know, set of rules than you have for the food one. So it's not as simple as just weighting them within different ranges of their value. The weighting shifts.
Well, I would add the other dimension is that as the program develops and as the time of year develops, using the analogy of the home budget, the budget changes, the priorities change.
Yeah.
You know, we just went through Thanksgiving and we're in the holiday season and our food budget goes up. We're buying, you know, nice stuff and better ingredients because we're hosting and cooking for our friends and family and stuff. And when you roll around to a vacation time, the priorities then shift again. And in product development, you know, early on when it's a brand new concept, feature set oftentimes is everything. What can we get in here? But as you get close to going to production, time to market, you know, and hitting the milestones for to launch the product becomes very important. But overall, it might be a cost as the underwriting factor that maintains an edge all the way through.
Here's the problem that I want to solve, and I understand it's going to be a very long journey, is how do you ensure that the, let's say I'm going to call them the algorithms that calculate the way the values that are very complex between all these important product factors, how do you ensure that they're being correctly influencing even the smallest decisions week to week in the program? Because I think what happens is, you know, they're not very much in the you know, the forethought of what's going on and just, you know, small things. I mean, she might come into a meeting, that project manager, and say, you know, just time to market. And everybody's like, all right, that's what we got to do. And then they find out, you know, other issues and they have to do a redesign because they ignored something. So you end up with, instead of a lot of small corrections, you end up with big program corrections that are at later dates, you know. And if you, I know that when I drive my car, my passengers appreciate a lot of small steering corrections rather than occasional big ones, right? It's just a better way to get where you're going.
You know, I've never ridden in a car with you, so I might have to push that off a little bit.
Okay, exactly. But I've in my surveys, I found that people enjoy a lot of small, nice corrections as I'm going down the road, you know. And I think for a program, it's the same thing. It's much more efficient. So I would love to solve the problem of how do you get those high-level relationships defined? How do you get the initial set of goals for each, you know, clearly defined, and how do you have them influence and being a part of decisions day to day? And if you can do that, you won't have the huge corrections. So I think that that's an interesting challenge. And I've come up with some ideas for some different tools that might help, but it's going to take a lot of messing around with and getting people to want to play around with it to really see how it could work.
Well, let's go back to this program manager with her laser focus on time to market. One thought that, I mean, at that time crossed my mind, and as we're talking, I'm looking at how this fits into how you're putting the tools together, is they knew that reliability was important, and they had a goal for the product. They wanted a relatively low failure rate over the 2 years of the warranty period, and it should last for 5 years with, again, a relatively small failure rate. And yet that was regularly chipped away at and sacrificed in the name of time to market. And what we did, and what the program manager, I think, was really looking for, is when do I need to get excited about this is too big of a problem for us to ship. If we ship on time, yeah, we get the revenue, but it'll all wash away if we have too high of a failure rate.
And it was the big correction, right? That's right. The big steering correction.
What's the trigger that I need to be aware of that then says, hey, I need to pay attention here. So we set a couple of different goals, levels that would trigger different levels of corrections. But it was an eye on the big goal and enabling the engineering teams the ability to say this amount of failure rate or this type of problem and this kind, we translated stuff back to failure rates basically, then had a cost. Here's the cost per failure. And that could be translated against the time to market because the marketing folks knew it was like $897,000 in lost profits for every day that we delayed, right? So a reliability problem had to be that large or bigger in order to justify a delay.
Right. So that equation, the relationship was being defined with much more detail.
Mm-hmm. And the key part, you know, the part that they didn't have, and it wasn't public knowledge, basically, was what was the cost per failure? And so they were doing a lot of reliability stuff anyway. It's just that the team didn't have a way to discuss when do we need to pay attention to it.
Exactly. So that's the last part. So once you define the relationship, you've defined the goal, how do you keep that, you know, actively influencing what's occurring? I mean, how many design reviews go by? How many weeks go by where that's not brought up and people are just chasing what's in front of them at the time? And I keep trying to think about, like, what are ways to do that? And one idea I had was, and this is something that's been used in other business practices, is the idea of if you list out, let's say, the five categories and goals, each week you rotate one as the focus goal. So in other words, at the beginning of regular meetings, like design reviews, steering meetings, things like that, you just mention, you know, this week's focus goal is time to market. And that's it at the beginning of the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, you mention it again. You said, all right, this is all the stuff we covered. Here's our, you know, for the meeting, you maybe summarize the meeting. And then you say, you know, our focus goal is time to market. Did any of these things affect that? Or does time to market affect, you know, what we discussed trying to accomplish it all? So at worst case, if it's not of importance, you've lost 10 seconds of company time, you know, by mentioning it for 5 seconds in the beginning and the end. And if it does turn out that it drives some additional discussion or how it, you know, or how it could affect the things you're actively doing or the things you're doing could affect that goal, it's a chance to possibly make one of those small corrections, you know. So it seems like something like that might change the big corrections and small corrections.
Well, I think you're hitting on just the awareness piece is that, you know, whether it's time to market or feature set or reliability or whichever of the priorities that the organization cares about, it's just by raising the awareness and bringing it to the level of active discussion helps it remain. Well, the counter of that is I think this program manager was reading the book that says you have to have a dominant priority. And the difficulty in larger organizations is communicating that clearly. And so by beating that drum all the time, consistently and loudly, you have a better chance of getting that priority through the organization. And I think her pushback would be, we're diluting that message if I talk about anything else.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of just silly. It seems very naive to perceive it that way, that we're diluting this message, because the message she's giving is kind of, I guess it's just, it's kind of confirming that there's a total lack of communication, a total lack of understanding of high level program objectives for everybody. And that, you know, she just has to come in and bulldog this one thing that if that does feel like what she needs to do or what she's being encouraged to do, obviously it was being ignored before because something else bulldogged it out of the way, you know? It's kind of this just silly constant cycling of fighting basically with never actually hitting your balance. You know, it doesn't make sense, because what'll happen is the next program, after they release this thing on time, it's going to have, you know, reliability, let's say, that in no way met their goal, they're going to take a huge hit and realize they're losing market share and then start the next product iteration, the next generation is going to be all about reliability. That's how we lost last time. And, right. you know, it's
and then the next one's all about cost and focus right. on cost. And then exactly. something else will suffer. What you're suggesting, though, is more of a nuance, acknowledging that it's complex and that we need to keep these different, say, crystal balls juggling. And we can't drop any of them. And we know that that's hard to do. But by raising it to a level of discussion and how they balance each other. And I think the underlying piece is that for reliability anyway, what we found, and I know you've seen this too, is that it's often, it's talked about euphemistically. Oh yeah, reliability is important. But it never goes much deeper than that in many conversations, if that's not their dominant forte.
It's the easiest one to cut. Because it's the one that has the longest return on investment.
Right.
So that's why it always becomes the one that's cut, because something like cost point when you release, that's pretty binary. You either hit it or you didn't, and right. you know where you're at.
And if you're on production, you know, and you're hitting the shelves at exactly the right time, you can measure that. If the feature set is there or it's not. And yep. I agree. Those things all can be measured today. Yet, and we've talked about it before, is that if you push off the reliability elements and ignore the consequences of those and set up bonuses and structures and incentives that focus on, say, time to market, you're ignoring the risk and peril that you're placing your organization. And I think that is probably the end for the quality reliability discussion, is that it's the acknowledgement that there's risk. And that risk is on a sliding scale. And we just need to have a mechanism, one, to raise the awareness, but two, to talk about the cost of the reliability risk versus the cost of a slip in the time to market.
Right. Right. So I see a couple tools or, you know, key program mechanisms here. I think one is to, as accurately as possible, establish the relationships, the complex relationships. Don't fool yourself and say they're simple and we're just going to rank them 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. But truly try to figure out a way to create some relational factor that you almost could put in an algebraic equation, or that, you know, identifies how these things relate to each other. Second would be to make sure that you've clearly defined the goals for each. You know, this date, it has Bluetooth touchscreen as features. It has, we have an 80, we release with 80% confidence and 95% reliability, you know, so on and so on. And these are clearly defined and clearly communicated to everybody. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third tool is that there's a way to very easily access not only what the goals are, but what adjustments have been done and how they affect each other in a very simple graphic or something that's can be accessed in any meeting. And I think you know, all those are good ways to help, you know, drive this, what you described, you know, is awareness, because in a lot of ways it is awareness. It really, that driving analogy really fits pretty well, because there's what you've described where people are just doing one thing until something, you know, forces them. That's the rumble strip on the side of the road, right? Mm-hmm, you're not paying mm-hmm. attention. You're not looking out your windshield. You're texting, you know, and then you hear the rumble strip and you're like, whoa, whatever. And you do a big thing, or you hear the car honking in the oncoming traffic lane and you do a big adjustment, as opposed to if you just look out the window, you know, at a higher frequency rate, you can make a lot of small corrections before those bigger warnings. And yeah. I think it's like that. And I think that it's important. I think that the home budgeting analogy is a great way to demonstrate the complexity of these relationships. And they do exist. We just have to take the time to put them on paper, because mm-hmm. we all know that. I didn't have to tell you that you can't take the food budget to zero. It defeats the purpose of a household, you know, but you knew that. But you also knew that it was okay to probably chop 10%, you know, anybody can chop 10% of the food budget pretty easily and have no effect on, you might even improve people's health because you're cutting out, you know, snacks and whatever, and that's mm-hmm. no big deal. That's an easy win for a budget adjustment. And you also knew that too. But would you know how to write that on paper in a way that you could relate to the others? That takes some energy, and I really don't think you can skip that step.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, one other thought is a place that this balancing discussion is not just in the program manager led team meeting, you know, where all the departments are there. But there's an often organizations will also have a meeting, a development team will have a meeting about the issues that they're finding. Here's the troubles spots we found. Here's the errors we've seen in firmware. Here's the test results we're getting. Here's the field failure rates we're getting. Here's the all the various venues of information coming in about something not right. And there's a triage process that goes through that. And it's inserting that that awareness piece of the complexity of the balance, basically. And so oftentimes when an issue comes up and there's not an obvious, easy fix, or we know exactly who needs to fix that and get it done, and it's a problem that says, oh, we need to learn more information about it, it shouldn't be just do failure analysis. It's also what's the ramification. And according to time to market, cost, feature set, and reliability, or your set of priorities. But the task should be to define the problem, not only what is the problem, but what's the ramification across our priorities. And there again, I think your notion of a graphic saying, well, here's our risk in these various areas. And it's, you know, red, yellow, green might even work. Is this is not a problem from time to market. We've got plenty of time to solve it. It's a cost issue because we have to spend energy, time, or change a component, and, you know, and so on. But that might be another place to increase the awareness, because that gets down to the detailed level.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to keep working on trying to make tools that can, you know, can help with this. And I think a lot of them will be simple tools, but, you know, as simple as looking out the window, right? And making right. The small corrections, you know, and just ensuring that that's consistently done. And then, you know, again, just taking the time to define these relationships that are a little bit more complex than just a ranking, you know, from 1 to 5.
So, well, let's ask our listeners. You know, we've got I like to think anyway that the comments we've received and the questions we've received so far kind of reflect that there's a lot of talent out there and there's a lot of experience. Is, you know, what works in your organization? How do you balance these various different priorities? You know, if you're in a time to market driven organization, how do you balance the other factors that you know that need to be done? Is it overt? Is there a deliberate tool or technique that's used? You know, what have you seen work? I'm also interested in what are those classic failures. If you're willing to share those, that'd be great too. We've received a few of those and enjoy reading those and sharing them, because I think we can all learn from each other for what works and also what doesn't work. So, yeah. You know, take a look at reliability.fm, find the Speaking of Reliability. This episode, I think, is going to be number 171.
Wow. That's amazing. We're getting close to 200 episodes. Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little more lead time this time on the 200th episode.
Okay.
But before that, Adam, I don't want to forget, and I want to mention this on the air, is, you know, if there's something in the shows that you like or don't like, we should, as the hosts, we should all huddle and figure out what we want to do going forward with the show. But I want to extend that offer to our listeners, too. Is there something you particularly like or you don't like? You know, let us know. We've always asked for topics and ideas and suggestions, and we get those on occasion, and we're happy to talk about those things. But also, just as the show evolves, you know, what are the things that give us an assessment? What do you think of the show, and what would you like to see improved or eliminated or whatever? We'd certainly love to hear from you on that. Great. So I'm thinking, Adam, and this is a topic that's evolving, and it's one of those that the set of tools I think part of it is how we as reliability professionals think through it and then adapt the conversation within our organizations. And part of that is also good for the overall organization, whether or not reliability is impacted. And I think that's a significant value we can add. Is if the team can balance these different priorities more effectively, including reliability, I'm not going to give that away, that's all good. So I'm looking forward to more discussions on these tools and as they develop and how we can best apply those across the range of different products that we deal with.
Yeah, I would, this topic more than most, I would love to hear any feedback or stories or thoughts from any of our listeners, because this is one where I really am actively, you know, pursuing it. It's really of interest. And the more actual real life, you know, on the ground examples and thoughts on it, the better. So I definitely encourage people to reach out.
That'd be great. All right. Well, thanks, Adam. Good topic. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.